There's a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Hey, welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge. This is The Reconnect. Happy Friday. We are here to speak the truth on the real issues of the day in real time. I mean, if I were going to do that right in this precise moment, I would be opening up the phone lines to ask you, what was the thing your parents did most recently to embarrass you? Because that's the conversation we were just having before we went on the air. So that would be the real issue of the day we would be speaking to in real time here at The Reconnect. All right, so how do we do that? How do we bring God back into the conversations of the day? And how do we do that in a way that honors Jesus? How do we speak the mind of Christ on the matters of the day? It's important for us to realize and recognize people don't actually need just another piece of our mind or another opinion piece. What they very much need is the peace of the mind of Christ. And as the ambassadors of Jesus Christ in this generation, we are actually the people who are supposed to be giving it to them. So connect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. I actually have a new blog posted there for you today, so go and get that. We're also updating the free chapter of Speak the Truth, which is posted at reconnectwithcarmen.com. The book releases on the 25th of September. If you have not already done so, please pre-order your copy. That will enable you to actually be a person who can post a review on the 25th. You can't post a review on the 25th if you wait till the 25th to buy a book. Amazon just doesn't like that. So there you go. If you want to be a person who gets to be a reviewer of the book on Amazon, go ahead and pre-order a book today. Okay. And then you can download a free chapter and then you'll be able to comment on it because, well, you know, you will have read it or at least part of it. Okay. We got lots of information at reconnectwithcarmen.com that, you know, I just don't have all the time here on the air that I might like to have and hopefully you would like for me to have. So if you want more of this, you can go to reconnectwithcarmen.com and you can download resources there. You can also get those on Facebook. We are The Reconnect. And I am on Twitter at Carmen LaBurge. All right, I've been tweeting up a storm today. I actually started off the morning, sort of woke up to the events in London, which we don't have enough resolution on really to say much other than we need to be praying for London in relationship to this latest terror attack. And we are certainly thankful to God that the improvised explosive device did not, in fact, do all of the deadly harm that it was designed to do. So we thank the Lord for snuffing it out in such a way that, you know, sadly, a couple dozen people were injured, but nobody with anything life-threatening and actually anything particularly life-altering. So I want to be thankful and grateful to God for the protections placed in those circumstances and in those environments, but certainly want to be lifting up with concern the continual sort of spirit of terror in the world. We don't want to be people of fear. We certainly want to be people who are living with freedom in this world and proceeding forward without fear. But there are certainly others who are seeking to terrorize us. So there you go. That would be a quick update on what's happening in London. So let me talk about North Korea, because that was the other thing I woke up to this morning. I woke up to news that North Korea had shot off another ballistic missile. This is a short range or intermediate range a ballistic missile, but it actually went 2,100 miles. So it went far enough to reach the U.S. territory of Guam, should it have been shot in the direction of Guam, but it was not. It was shot over Japan. So let's just imagine for a moment that that the North Koreans, planning to overshoot Japan in this kind of show of force and in this kind of show of defiance over and against the UN sanctions, the new UN sanctions approved this week by the United Nations Security Council. Let's just say that, you know, the missile hadn't gone as far as it was supposed to go, and it had actually hit Japan. So this is why, you know, shooting off your missiles in the direction of others, even if you're hoping to overshoot them, is just a bad idea. The provocations, the dangers involved, the fear that results among people is significant. And so we are in a dangerous state or a dangerous time in terms of the state of North Korea and what's happening there. So this was actually the second time that North Korea launched a missile over Japan in just the last few weeks. An eyewitness there who doesn't speak Japanese, right? So he's in Japan and he is He says, I had no idea what was happening. This is Matthew Galat reporting, being reported here in the CBS News. He says, I had no idea what was happening, but over the loudspeaker, they're playing this same sentence over and over throughout the city. And he said, I translated it with my phone, and it said, find shelter in a basement. North Korea just launched a missile. So I want you to imagine that that is what your phone translator is telling you as you are in a foreign country, not able to speak the language. So just prayers for everybody who I'm sure is living today in range of North Korea and recognizes that this is just a very dangerous time. So again, the missile flew more than 2,000 miles, actually flew 2,300 miles, which is farther than any previous North Korean missile. And again, had it been launched toward the south, the missile would have been able to hit the U.S. military bases in Guam, which are just 2,100 miles away. Okay, so what's happening? What are we doing in response? Well, the president, you know, told them to stop. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called on China and Russia to agree to tougher sanctions. And China has responded by saying that it's time to have direct talks with North Korea. And it has been suggested that the only way that this is going to be resolved is if Donald Trump himself goes and has direct interaction and conversations with North Korea. That, my friends, is just very unlikely to happen. I don't see us putting our president in that kind of position. Okay, so the real issue, what's really at issue, is that the North Koreans have nuclear weapons. It's a problem that they have intermediate range and intercontinental ballistic missiles, but it's a real problem that they have nukes that they can put on those missiles. And so when we talk about the threat of nuclear war, what we're talking about is the annihilation of a people and a place. And if you have seen images, which I know you have seen images of what nuclear bombs do, and certainly the Japanese are well aware of what we're talking about, having just passed a significant anniversary of the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So we know what nuclear devastation actually looks like. We don't really know what it would look like in the kinds of heavily populated areas that we're talking about now. Okay, we're talking about a different kind of Japan than existed at the end of World War II. We're certainly talking about a different kind of United States of America than existed in World War II. We're talking about densely populated places. So if you have seen pictures of Barbuda, a little island in the Caribbean, this is actually a story that can help you imagine what nuclear annihilation might look like, because no one, as of today, no one, not one soul, lives on the island of Barbuda. So let me read this lead from CNN. When Hurricane Irma ravaged the island of Barbuda in the Caribbean, the ferocious storm extinguished the isle's way of life, left the beautiful spot uninhabitable. And now, for the first time in centuries, no one lives there. Just think about that for just a moment. No one lives there. The damage is described as complete, a humanitarian disaster, but also a genuinely natural disaster. Literally every building, just swept from its foundations. So if you want to know what a war zone looks like, this is what a war zone looks like. And if you want to know what it would look like to imagine, or what would it be like to imagine a place where people have lived for hundreds of years to suddenly be completely uninhabited, this is an opportunity to have that kind of conversation. Barbuda is literally, as of today, what we could describe as a paradise lost. It is described as currently uninhabitable. It is a place where no one, as of today, now lives. There have been people living on the island of Barbuda, the Barbudan community, as they are described here by CNN, for generations, for more than 300 years in terms of some family lines. It is their homeland, and they say, yes, we want to go back. That's where they say all their possessions are. And yet, if you were to look at pictures, you would say to yourself, there's little there to go back for. And it does, it should lead us to the question of not only is it possible to return to a particular place, but is it wise to return to a particular place? If we are at the stage of the game, Scientists tell us we're at the stage of the game where the waters are rising and they're getting warmer and these storms are actually more likely. And if that be true, is it prudent to go back and rebuild your life in the middle of the Caribbean on a low-lying island? I don't know the answer to that question. These are questions of should. These are not necessarily questions of can we? Is it possible? All things are possible, right? Not all things, even all things are even permissible, but not all things are wise. Not all things are prudent. So let's talk about prudence, the Christian worldview, and what it means to be wise, what it means to use wisdom and apply wisdom in relationship to these kinds of conversations. But this whole concept of paradise lost in Barbuda got me thinking about the Garden of Eden, which led me to this particular headline. It all began with Adam and Eve. This is a book review by Public Radio. So if you are a Public Radio fan, you know they review books from time to time. It won't surprise you that the book that they're reviewing is not a fan of like belief in God, or not a fan of belief in the reality of Adam and Eve, but certainly a fan of a book written about the story. And so this is a book about the power of story and how story is formative in our lives. So let me just read a couple of excerpts. The book is The Rise and Fall of Adam and Eve by Stephen Greenblatt. The review here on NPR is It All Began with Adam and Eve by Michael Schaub. So he says here, there's a reason storytelling has endured as a medium. The best stories are never just that. They connect us to something deeper. They explain our most deeply held beliefs. Goes on to say, whether we believe in the story of Adam and Eve or regard it as an absurd fiction, we have been made in its image. Over many centuries, the story has shaped the way we think about crime and punishment, moral responsibility, death, pain, work, leisure, companionship, marriage, gender, curiosity, sexuality, and our shared humanness. It also, by the way, this doesn't say this in the article, but it forms the way that we think about paradise. It forms the way that we think about creation. It forms the way that we think about what it means to live in a lush garden and not a barren desert. What paradise was before paradise was lost, which, of course, he argues never actually happened because there was no paradise to be lost. He says science did away with that idea with the discovery of the dinosaurs. Dinosaurs, it says, helped to destroy the Garden of Eden. Paradise was, in fact, not lost. It never existed. That's the claim here. So Greenblatt, who is the author of this book and reviewed here by NPR, believes that, quote, like many on both the secular and religious sides, the Adam and Eve story, he believes, is a myth, an allegory, fiction at its most fictional. A story that reveals the delights of make-believe. So why do so many people believe in the story of Adam and Eve? That would be a good question to ask. Why am I talking about this book and this book review on a distinctively Christian show, on a distinctively Christian broadcasting network? Okay, because you and I have to be prepared to engage in the conversations of the day with people who don't share our beliefs. So if you believe that the Bible is the Word of God, believe it is inspired, believe that it contains and reveals truth, real substantive truth, and you believe that God is the creator of all things and that Adam and Eve are the God's first people, and from them all humanity flows, and you believe that sin entered the world through one man, Adam. Salvation entered the world through one man, Jesus, right? So the narrative of the Christian faith is grounded in the creation narrative. And so you and I say to ourselves, wow, if you just do away with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden and you do away with the fall into sin, what need is there for a savior? What need is there for God to come from the outside, incarnate in the person of Jesus Christ, and save me and save fallen humanity and save fallen creation and promise the restoration of all things in a new heaven on a new earth, restored in paradise? Well, indeed. So that's why we have to be able to talk about these things. We have to be able to engage with those who are critical of the story of Adam and Eve as a myth, those who are critical of the Bible as simply an ingathering of stories that were made up by a particular group of people to support a particular way of thinking. So that is what this book seeks to expose. And it's described as a deep dive into the history, not only of the story of Adam and Eve, but into the history of the region of the ancient Near East. And so I'm going to read to you a portion of this for, and I have good cause because I want to use it as a segue to our next conversation about a movie that comes out today called Mother, which is horrific, and I am not recommending it either. So this is like the day of non-recommendations on the show. Don't read this book and don't go to this movie. There you go. The non-recommendation Friday on The Reconnect. Okay, what the book talks about is that the interpretation of, you'll recognize this guy, Augustine of Hippo. You will recognize him as Saint Augustine, the Confessions of Augustine. That guy is the guy who Greenblatt says is responsible for the way we think about the Adam and Eve narrative in the opening chapters of the book of Genesis. He says it's really all Augustine of Hippo. Was his interpretation, quote, that opened the floodgates to what? To the current misogyny that swirled for centuries around the figure of the first woman. Everyone had to understand that whatever authority women wielded was strictly constrained by limits that are traced back to the sin of the first woman. Again, putting all the responsibility for the fall upon Eve. What Greenblatt misses in this, what he completely and utterly misses, is that the creation narrative is about God making human beings, male and female, both equally in his image. It absolutely misses the beautiful equality of male and female that is described in the creation narrative. Instead, he fixates on the hierarchical language, and he fixates on the fact that Eve ate first. Now, he fixates on that because he says from the time of Augustine moving forward, that is what the church fixated on. So let me just throw out this very secular way of talking about things. Let me throw out Father Nature and Mother Time, right? Father Nature and Mother Time. That's how we think about those two ideas, right? And you're saying to yourself, no, there's something wrong with that. I'm not exactly sure what's wrong with it, but she's definitely squirreled around with something there. Well, that's because from a secular worldview, the kinds of language that gets used are Mother Nature and Father Time. Why is that? Well, because we have somehow in some way attributed certain characteristics to male and femaleness and the earth itself, creation itself, for whatever reason, maybe because it's the place of fertility and the place from which life springs forth in many, many ways, is attributed to as mother. And so we get Mother Earth. We get Mother Nature. We don't get Father Nature and Father Earth. I don't really know why, but that's the way it works. We get things like Father Time. So apparently these ideas are not just deeply ingrained in the narrative of the Christian and biblical worldview, but they're deeply ingrained in a secular worldview as well. So I lift that up to you, and let's make a segue there to this crazy movie called Mother, because this is where the Mother Earth thing really springs forth for me. All right, so I read an interview by Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence is the star, or one of the stars. She's the woman, referred to, by the way, in the movie as woman. If you want something misogynistic, there it is. She's just referred to as woman, and she refers to her husband as man. Woman and man do not treat one another with any kind of mutual respect nor kindness. And certainly when the baby is on the way, you can imagine that the concept of mother with an exclamation point gets terrifyingly even more horrible. It's very dystopic. It's nihilistic. It ends with a repetitive nothingness. And I could not discourage you more significantly from going to see it. However, the Jennifer Lawrence interview in relationship to the movie Mother, wherein she talks about Mother Nature, is interesting. And so I direct you to that. She says when asked about to talk about, you know, the recent hurricanes, she says, you know, you're watching these hurricanes and it's really hard, especially while promoting this movie, not to feel Mother Nature's rage. Okay, the only way you can feel Mother Nature's rage is if you have attributed to Mother Nature some kind of personal power, that there is a personality to this deity. So apparently the science-loving Jennifer Lawrence, who on one breath says that all of this is the fault of climate change, and the other, in her next breath, she says Mother Nature is actually doing all of this because she is upset with the United States of America over the election of Donald Trump. So we have a real challenge here in terms of the way people are thinking about the concept of mother and the way people are failing to abide by what I would describe as the fifth commandment's command to honor our mothers. Okay, so the mother movie in no way honors mothers. Mother nature as a concept, particularly if you are going to refer to it as some kind of personified, wrathful, angry woman, is no way to honor the concept of mother. And so when you hear people use this kind of language in the culture, when you hear people talking about possibly going to see this movie, I want you to redeem motherhood in every way you can. We live in a culture that it wants to do away with mothers at every turn. I am really encouraging you today. I actually have a blog posted about this today at reconnectwithcarmen.com. And I don't have time to unpack all of that here on the air, but go to reconnectwithcarmen.com. The very first thing that's posted there at the top right now is this blog about Mother Earth and Mother the movie and our culture's obsession with matricide, which is the doing away with mom altogether. Okay, so let me move on to two good news pieces of the day. Number one, I want to celebrate with Senator Lankford his winning. I guess winning. He was awarded by the National Religious Broadcasters. He was awarded the 2017 Faith and Freedom Award. And James Lankford is a Republican from Oklahoma. He has been with us here on the Reconnect. He advocates continuously for religiously persecuted minorities around the world. He is very concerned about Christians in the Middle East. He has advocated on behalf of our fellow Presbyterian, Andrew Brunson, who continues to languish in a Turkish prison. And there's no better person to receive this 2017 Faith and Freedom Award from the National Religious Broadcasters than James Lankford. So we appreciate his advocacy, his championing of these concerns and these issues. And as a member organization of the NRB, of the National Religious Broadcasters, we just wanted to bring that to you today and just celebrate the good things that are happening out there. Now, to my favorite story of the day. If you haven't seen it yet on Google, you could just Google 11-year-old Mo's Rose Garden Lawn, something like that. I got to tell you, because you got to see the video. The mainstream media is not going to show the video. It's just not going to happen. But you have to go see the video. And so there's this 11-year-old boy, and he lives in Virginia, and he sent the president a letter in his own little scrawly 11-year-old handwriting, talking about how much he admires the president for his business acumen. And he talks about his own little business, and his own little business is a lawn care business. And he says, "You got a big lawn there at the White House. Maybe I could come mow your lawn and I'll give you the regular rate. I'll mow your yard for the regular rate." And I'm thinking to myself, dude, the lawn of the White House is big. You got to charge more than your regular rate, like unless you're charging by the hour. I don't know. And if you look, if you watch the video, one of the things that you will observe is he's got his push mower out there. And obviously the National Park Service let the lawn grow really high in anticipation of having this little boy out there pushing his push mower through this grass that has been, it's really lush. My grass does not look like that. Anyway, he's out there and he's got his safety glasses on and he's got his gloves on and he's got his earplugs in and he's working so hard to mow that grass that he doesn't hear nor see out of his peripheral vision the president. And so the president's like following him around, trying to catch up with him. And that boy, man, he is pushing that mower and he is working it. He is working it so hard. So finally, the president actually taps him and gets his attention. And his dad, tells him, like, kill the mower, right? Like, turn the mower off. And it's just precious. You have to see the video. It's, again, I don't think it's something the mainstream media is going to show anybody, but I really want people to go and appreciate the industry, the energy, the delightfulness of this young man, and the president's reaction and response and engagement with him. If you want to see the president sort of at his best, this is probably one of those things. He's sort of a dad at heart, and you can just tell that that he's got a dad thing going out to this young man. So he asked this kid what he aspires to be. This kid wants to be a Navy SEAL. So there you go. The headline should read, "Future Navy SEAL Mows White House Lawn." If you want a good news story of the day, there it is for you. Hey, this is The Reconnect. I'm Carmen LaBurge. Visit me online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. I'll be right back. Hey, friends, welcome back. I'm Carmen LaBurge. This is The Reconnect. We are here to put God in his place back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So we're talking about what people are talking about. We are seeking to equip you to be an ambassador of the kingdom of God in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. We invite you to connect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. I've got a new blog posted there today, so you might want to go and read that. It's a follow-up to the conversation that we had yesterday about Mother Nature and the movie Mother and our cultural matricide. So I encourage you to go to reconnectwithcarmen.com today and take a look at what I have to say there. We always love your comments and your feedback. That's also posted on our Facebook page. If that is a more convenient place for you to visit, please do so. I am also on Twitter at Carmen LaBurge. All right, friends, while you're at the website, you can sign up for our email list. You'll receive timely equipping resources that are designed to help you reconnect the eternal with the everyday and bring God back into the conversation in ways that honor Jesus. Again, the website is reconnectwithcarmen.com. So we're excited to have with us here today, Sally Lloyd-Jones. You certainly recognize her name as the author of the Jesus Storybook Bible, but she's also the author of many other things and a wonderful storyteller. And she has a new book called His Royal Highness, King Baby, A Terrible True Story. You can find out all about it at sallylloyd-jones.com. And we're going to talk today with Sally about children and about communicating the truth of who God is to children and how we've messed that up. So welcome to The Reconnect.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really want to start with, what is the reaction that you feel like most kids give when we ask them about how they feel or what they think about the Bible?
Well, I think I'll just speak from what I remember as a child. When I was about six, I would have said, I think it's telling you how you should behave so God will love you. Or it's also giving you people to copy, because you have to copy people in the Bible to be like the way God wants you to be. That's what I would have thought. So in other words, a book of rules or a book of heroes that you're supposed to copy so that God will love you.
And one of the things that, at least in our family, you have helped bring to life and bring to light is that that is not what the Bible is about.
No, thank goodness. Thank God.
So tell us, why you wrote the Jesus Storybook Bible. You know, there's more than 2 million people out there with their hands on it. But I do think it's a tremendous gift to families who have thought the way that many of us thought about the Bible. And you have written something and done something that is changing the way parents and others can approach sharing the Bible with children. So why did you write the Jesus Storybook Bible? Why do you write books like this brand new one, His Royal Highness King Baby? Why are you doing this? What's the motivation?
So the reason I'm writing, I think, is to bring joy to children. And whether I do that through telling the story of the Bible or with this new book, which is basically a book that helps older siblings when a new baby comes along, I want to bring comfort and joy to a child where they are. And for children, things like, you know, potty training can be traumatic. So I wrote a book called Skip to the Loo, My Darling, because it makes potty training fun. So I'm always on the level with the child, thinking, how can I help them in their experience that to them is as huge as if, like, for instance, potty training. If you said to an adult right now, stand up in front of 1,000 people and give a speech, you wouldn't like it as an adult. Well, that, I think, approximates how a toddler feels when you tell them they have to go on the potty. You know, they're terrified. So if you can make that fun for them, then I think you're doing what God would have you do. That's how I feel my job is. And then in terms of telling the story of the Bible, the key is it's a story. It's not a rule book. It has rules in it that help us know how to live. And it does have some heroes in it, but really hardly any of them are heroes. When you look at them, they're very broken, which is, thank goodness, because we're broken. And once you realize the Bible is a story, it's not about what you are supposed to do so God will love you. It's about what God has done because he loves you. And it's the most fantastic rescue story, which, you know, I know little boys, they come up and, you know, they want their Bible signed. And you can see in their eyes that their imagination has caught fire because there's this hero and this great rescue and they can be part of this story. And then it's also a love story, you know, about a prince who comes and rescues his lost treasure. So you can't really beat that. And once children see that it's a story, you capture their imagination. And then that's from there that lives change.
So one of the things that I have heard you say
And I would love for my listeners to hear you say as well, is this invitation to not feel like as the adult or as the parent, mm-hmm. I have to have all the answers. I have to tie it all up in a neat little bow. I have to resolve or solve everything, and I have to bring it all to resolution by the end of the story and make the application and be sure everybody knows, you know, this is what the story means, mm-hmm. right? Wash that away for us and invite us into the leaving things with wonder.
Yes. Well, the truth is a story is powerful and it's like a seed. It works secretly only though if it's not explained to death and sort of drilled down into a moral lesson. But we prefer bullet points and we like rulers and measuring because then we're in control. Then we can see, oh, good, I did a good job because I did that. I checked all these boxes. But my thing would be to say, to encourage people to trust the story. If you read a story to a child, let the story do the work. The minute you say, you read a story, and I do this, I have fallen into this mistake myself. You read the story, and then at the end, you think, I've got to make an application. So then you go, so children, what does this teach us about how God wants us to behave? So basically, what you've done is you've taken it from being a story and you've made it a moral lesson. And a story isn't a sermon, it's a story. Sermons are a different thing. When you read a story, the power of the story needs to be the power of the story. You don't need anything else added. And in fact, if you add something, you've basically made the story about what you think it's about. What if God wanted to talk to that child about something else? If you leave the story to do its work, it's between God and the child. And just like a seed, it works secretly in the dark. You may not see it for years, and it's almost none of our business. But our job is to bring the child the story and then trust God. Now, of course, there are other ways to involve the child, but I would always say if you're going to ask a question after a story, do more of an open-ended question. Don't do a leading question. Do something like, you know, I wonder, like with the story of the 5,000, feeding of the 5,000, instead of saying, okay, so now we need to know that we have to share our lunch, which is, yes, it's good to share your lunch, but that's not why that story's there. If you go instead and you go, you know what, I wonder what would happen if we gave Jesus everything we had. That little boy gave Jesus everything he had, and look what happened. I wonder what would happen if I gave Jesus everything I have. And use it in whatever situation the child is in that day. If they're going into school and they're scared, well, I wonder if I gave God everything I am, everything I don't have, all my... What if I gave him all the things I'm scared of? What if I gave him the ways I feel terrified and then trusted him and then looked out in the day for what he might do with that? I think that's the way to lead children.
So some of the wonder questions in my household are what next wondering. So in the feeding of the 5,000, there's often the wondering about what happened to the leftovers. There's often wondering in the story where the prodigal son returns. Mm-hmm. There has been a lot of wondering in my house about breakfast the next day,
mm-hmm.
right? Did the elder son, did they all have breakfast the next day? Yeah. How did they all live together after that?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this wonder about how did God continue on in this story? How did this story unfold?
Mm-hmm.
And so I really appreciate the invitation that you consistently give to invite the adult to wonder together with the child as children.
We're all children before God, and I think that's, we're not coming in a situation like a devotional reading together. I think that's the time you don't have to be the teacher. There are obviously places that you're, you know, parents have to give children rules, and there are, that's all appropriate, but I think there needs to be a time when it's not about rules. Just like as an adult, when you go to your devotional or you read the Bible in the morning, you are not looking for a load of rules. We wouldn't, you know we need grace. And I just want to say, so do children. And yes, we need to guide them, but we need to make sure that they have times where we're extending to them the grace that we need. And we're just giving them strength for the day. And strength for the day doesn't come from telling us all these rules, because the moral code never rescues us. It can't. It leaves us in despair. And a child whose life is full of rules all the more needs a moment when it's not about rules, when it's about, look, God loves you just the way you are. And he's for you, and he's cheering you on, and he knows, and he loves you. I mean, that will equip a child far more than if we kind of use a Bible story to scold them.
I love it. Again, we're talking with Sally Lloyd-Jones. We're talking about her new book, His Royal Highness, A King Baby, A Terrible True Story. And it is a way of helping older siblings accept and receive the dramatic change that comes with the introduction of a new little person into their life.
A new king that kicks them off the throne. And the thing about this book that's so fantastic is the illustrations. So I encourage anyone to just check it out on my website because, you know, I work with so many great illustrators. He's up there among the very top. And it's just, I love the fact, I mean, I'm an older sibling, so I remember, I have very vivid memories of how awful it was when my sister came along and how unfair, and I'm the one who can read and I'm the one who can do this. And yet everyone's paying attention to this blob that's just arrived. So I think if you can get children laughing about something that actually is quite traumatic, then you heal it and it makes it less so. So
oh,
I think
I love that.
That's my hope for the book.
Now, folks are very fascinated and interested by your own growing up and your own story. I know you are planning to share that this fall. Share with us the plan for sharing your story.
Yes. Well, it's not actually this fall, but in a year's time.
Oh, yes.
Fall 2018. Ellie Holcomb, who's fantastic. If anyone doesn't know her music, they need to get that music right away. And her new album is Red Sea Road, which is, there's no dud on that album at all. Anyway, we went on tour this spring, an evening of stories and songs, where I tell my story, where I was born in Africa, went to boarding school in, you know, England, and how it all worked together to, God used all of that to get me to write the Jesus Storybook Bible. And Ellie tells stories about her childhood and her children, and it all weaves together into this evening of worship, really. But I'm going to be doing that and telling my story. And so I'd love people to keep in touch with me, sign up for my newsletter, because then I can announce to them where we're going.
All right, friends, and you can do that at sallylloyd-jones.com. And you can, again, you can connect with her there. You can check out the whole list of books that are available. And you can also keep up to date with how the story's unfolding in your life and through Sally into the lives of our kids. All right, Sally, if you could encourage parents to go, you know, beyond the storybook Bible, is there a step you provide for them in the developing of their child's relationship with God? An additional resource beyond the storybook Bible that you would recommend to them today?
Absolutely, yes. We've done a follow-up called Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing, which are 101 very short devotional thoughts that you could read around the breakfast table. They're short enough that it would keep the attention of a two-year-old. It's also, every thought has an illustration by Jago. And I wrote that book because my niece was being bullied at school. And I asked her, she went from being a very vivacious little girl to very, very quiet and withdrawn. And we found out she was being bullied, which is heartbreaking. And I know a lot of parents understand, and aunts and uncles and grandparents, we're all devastated when we hear that. And I asked her, what do you read before you go into school? And she showed me what she was reading. And it was very, you know, it wasn't really suitable for what she needed. It was all very fill in the blanks and moralistic. And I thought, I wish she had something that would tell her what God says about her instead of what the bullies are saying. And so I wrote it for her. And I wrote it so that it would be beautiful. Jago's art is so stunning. It's like a jewel. And my vision for it was it would be on the child's bedside table, and the parents would have to beg them to share it with them over breakfast. And that's funny enough. I think God gave me that vision because that's what I hear, is that the child wants it by their bedside table. So oh, I would recommend Thoughts to Make Your Heart Sing. It's an easy way to do devotions without having to spend a long time. And it also opens it up to discussion, the illustrations as well as the text.
Well, thank you for being a person who gives us thoughts that make our hearts sing. And thank you for equipping us as adults who very much want for our kids to know that they are loved of God and beloved, and for providing us resources that sort of allow us to be children with them, mm-hmm. that we want to engage the story and re-engage the story as well. So thank you for your story. Thank you for sharing your story with us and with others. Again, folks, the website is sallylloyd-jones.com, and you can find all of the information there about her newest book, His Royal Highness King Baby. But you can also find information there about the other resources we've talked about about today, the Jesus Storybook Bible and Thoughts to Make My Heart Sing, as well as information about her upcoming tour in the fall of 2018 with Ellie Holcomb. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today
on the
Reconnect.
Carmen. It's great to be here.
Okay, friends, let's talk a little bit this afternoon about how this magic happens. So depending on how you're listening to us, you're either listening live on the radio, you're listening to streaming audio, or you're listening to us via podcast, or you have gone to the website at reconnectwithcarmen.com and you have downloaded an episode of this show. Let me tell you that all of that requires a production team and production facilities. It requires editing. It requires satellite feed. It requires people and time and energy and effort. And none of that would surprise you if you think about actually how this all happens. And so all of that, shocking, I know, actually costs money. And so this is a ministry. We provide all of these resources to you free of charge. We feel privileged to be talking with you every day and helping you bring God back into the conversations of the day. And so it's that time of year where we're going to make an appeal to you to support us, to come alongside us, to partner with us in this ministry, that indeed we might be equipping more and more people to get off the sidelines and into the conversations of the day in ways that honor Jesus. We'd love to hear stories from you about how we have helped you do that, the conversations that we have influenced. I love the feedback that you send me on both Facebook and Twitter. We love hearing from you over the phone and text messages. You can actually text your story to 877-655-6755. That's a really easy way to communicate with us in terms of how the Reconnect has helped you reconnect the eternal with the everyday. So I would encourage you to do what sometimes is difficult to do, and that is to, you know, reach into your pocket and actually support ministries that are supporting you in the advancement of the gospel. So when you think about radio or you think about podcasts, a lot of us think about that as something that's free. And so if you think long about it, and again, some of what we do is encouraging people to think about what they're thinking about. So just think about this with me for a moment. None of it's free. Right. And so if this is something that is of encouragement to you, we sure would appreciate your partnership in the ministry at this time, critical time of year, as we look toward the last couple of months of this year. And as we try to plan for what 2018 is going to look like for this ministry. So I get a lot of encouragement from the Apostle Paul on this subject from the 8th chapter of 2 Corinthians. Maybe this is a text that you have heard before, but I'm going to share it with you. He says, "And now, brothers, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. Out of their most severe trial, their overflowing joy, and their extreme poverty, welled up in rich generosity. I testify that they gave as much as they were able, and even beyond their ability. Entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing, sharing in this service to the saints." So I want to pause there for a moment. When was the last time you urgently pleaded with a ministry that has been a blessing to you? When's the last time you pleaded with that ministry for the privilege of sharing with them in the service to the saints? That's what we experience when people come alongside this ministry and partner with us financially. We actually experience the privilege of sharing in this service to the saints with other people. Paul went on. "And they did not do as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us in keeping with God's will. So we urged Titus, since he had earlier made a beginning, to bring also to completion this act of grace on your part. But as you did excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, and in your love for us, see that you also excel in this grace of giving." What does it look like to excel in the grace of giving? I think that is that's a tremendous question. First of all, to experience giving, to experience the reality of generosity and the opportunity to share with others what we in turn have also received as the benefits of our labor, and some of us simply as a gift from the Lord who pours every good gift into our lives, including our financial capacity to answer and meet and address the needs of others. So it is grace that we receive. And the question is, do I actually excel in the grace of giving? That's a hard question. I think there are some things that are easier to give than others. And depending on how we're wired, some of us, it's easier to give to some people than to others. I'll just admit that. I think that to excel in the grace of giving means that we sort of give without without that sort of regret-filled or regretful hesitancy that sometimes sort of tarnishes the joy of giving to others. And so I want you to think about the last time that you gave something, obviously with no expectation of getting anything back. You actually gave something to someone. You recognized their particular need. You gave to them joyfully out of the abundance of your own life. And then, you know, they were actually empowered to live more fully and more fruitfully because of your gift. Now, this is not an orphan care ministry. This is not a frontline feeding the hungry ministry. This is a ministry that is a ministry of word. And the word goes out from here with the goal and hope of edifying and equipping the people of God to enter into the conversations of the day in ways that honor Jesus. You actually are the culture makers and culture transformers in the world today. You are the ambassadors of Jesus Christ. And we are here every day seeking to equip you for the role and responsibility that you bear as Christ's ambassadors, as the agents of grace in the culture today. So we are giving to you everything we've got. We're pouring it out. We're pouring it out to you in the hope that as you receive it, you will then in turn pour it out into the lives of others. We would love to hear those stories. We would love to hear how God is using the Reconnect in your life. Maybe God is using it in your conversations in your car. Maybe God is using it in your small group at church. Maybe in conversations with your neighbors. I get a lot of feedback from listeners who are parents who are using what we do here on the Reconnect in their conversations with other parents as they seek together to raise godly children in a most ungodly culture. So you can share those stories with me online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can do so on Facebook. You can do so on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBerge. Or you can text me. I like to voice text, so you can actually voice text us at 877-655-6755. Again, that number is 877-655-6755. The donate button is on reconnectwithcarmen.com, and we would sure appreciate it if you took the time to go to the website today and make a gift and tell us your story. I actually want both of those things, so I'll just ask for the abundance of both. Our desire is not, even as Paul says, that others would be relieved while you are hard-pressed, but that each of us might have the joy of both giving and receiving as the Lord has provided for us. So however it is that the Lord has provided for you, maybe you have a spiritual reservoir that is deep and wide, and your financial reservoirs are maybe not so deep and wide. I would really ardently appreciate your prayers for this ministry. Would you be praying that God would lift up financial partners for this ministry that would enable us to not only finish this year well, but move into next year with a ministry plan that continues to provide for the Reconnect to be broadcast on both radio and obviously in digital media. So you can check it all out at reconnectwithcarmen.com. That's a great place to share today's show with someone else. Maybe you share it with somebody who you say, hey, I actually know somebody who would appreciate this ministry and who has the capacity to support this ministry financially. All right, friends, that's about all the time we have here today on The Reconnect. Be keeping an eye on our Facebook page. So we're going to be giving away in the next couple of weeks a couple of copies of Sally Lloyd-Jones's book. And so if you're a person who says to yourself, hey, I loved that interview, I loved what that book sounded like, keep an eye on our Facebook page at The Reconnect and watch for your opportunity to enter into a drawing for a copy of her latest book. Hey, while you're at the website, sign up for our email list. Share today's show with someone new. And as we've already been talking about, we sure would appreciate your financial partnership with this ministry. All right, friends, that's all we got time for today. Connect with me online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Sign up for the podcast. Donate to the ministry. Share today's show with someone new. Have a great day and God bless.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.